you better get ready for the big blizzard coming down. So to keep you warm, to keep you toasty, to keep you entertained while you're snowed in, while you're looking at your dog like he's a walking ham shank, while you're looking at your brother and your sister like they're mashed potatoes walking down the stairs, this is Punk News Podcast 285. Let's get snowed in. And welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile here on our Snowy Spectacular on the Snowden Special. And we are here with, first of all, the guy out there in Grand Rapids. They get snow all the time. Also, the setting for everyone's favorite ABC family sitcom, Step by Step. We are here with reviews writer Tom Trauma. Tom Trauma.
Is that true? Is Step by Step set in Grand Rapids?
Step by Step is set in Grand... Well, the show is set in Grand Rapids, but it's like filmed in San Francisco because they like live on a bay or something, even though they're in Grand Rapids.
Well, I never watched it, so shame on me.
Tom, are you getting ready for the big snowstorm? What are you doing in preparation for the abominable snowman to come knocking at your door?
You know, we're hardy folks over here. We're not really that worried about it. Life goes on. Dump the snow on us. We shake our fist in the air in defiance and go to work anyway.
Well, what
like our Canadian friends.
What in an American spirit, shaking one's fist at God at any minor convenience to show the superiority of man over nature, and therefore the superiority of man over nature, and therefore the concept that man has free will. To counter that point, we're here with everyone's favorite Canadian, a guy that when he sees snow like you and I see air. It snows 363 days a year up there. Only pauses for the holidays. We are here with managing editor Adam White. Managing editor Adam White, do you believe in predestination or free will?
Nope, you're all just gears in God's machine. And God's machine, John, is a meat grinder. That said, I live in like the probably second most temperate area of Canada. So like everyone else in Canada has far worse winters than I do. But I will absolutely play the card and make fun of you for complaining about whatever snowstorm that you're apparently having.
Well, there's a snowstorm coming down this Friday.
Is it one that the Weather Network has given a bullshit name because they're still trying to do that?
I think it's called Snowstorm Tom Trauma is what it's called. I think.
Snowmageddon. Not
the weather. Yeah. That's ours. What do you call it? Oh, the Weather Channel. Yeah, the Weather Channel down there. Like, what is this? They name storms, but like it's not like a hurricane where there's some sort of, I don't know, non-governmental weather committee that's naming storms. It's just the fucking Weather Channel is naming the storms and hoping that the rest of the world just picks up on it. So here, if I go here, what's now?
I think the new one's called Operation Snow Job.
No.
Well, they predict.
What's the name? Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
Snowzilla.
They're calling it. This is Winter Storm Jonas, right? But like, the only one that uses that name is the Weather Channel.
Huh.
But like, and if you look at any of their coverage, like they're trying desperately to make the rest of the world pick up on the fact that they're giving these storms names. But if you do a Google News search on the name of the storm, and it's like only the Weather Channel actually uses the name, and all the whole rest of the world is like fuck you, Weather Channel. You can't just decide that we're naming these things.
How heated do you think it is, like the naming of storms and snowstorms? Like, do you think there's like eight people that are like yelling at each other, like, no, it should be Snowstorm Betty. No, it should be Snowstorm Beatrice, you asshole. And they break out in fights? Or do you think just somebody says, let's call it Snowstorm Blatty, and that's it?
I bet you that on the – and I'm sure there's an easy answer to this that we could Google, but let's just speculate.
I'd rather speculate.
And I bet you that on the hurricane end of it, there is a very dignified and I'm going to say like time-tested way that they do it.
Well, they always go in alphabetical order for the hurricanes. I don't know who names them. Yeah, I don't know.
There's probably like a very gentlemanly way that that's actually decided. And then on the winter end, it's just like fucking Weather Channel is like – I bet you they have all these names copyrighted. Those assholes. Can't just name stuff.
We should start naming stuff. Like, we should start naming, like, trends. Like, this is Internet Trend Steve. And it'll be like man bun. Like, we'll name the trend man bun. Like, we'll name it, like, the internet. Well, what's the name?
I like Internet Trend Steve.
They call me Steve.
It's like, man, it's like, what are all the kids up to these days? Must be Internet Trend Steve. Anyway, listen, talking about Internet trends, one of the trends of the Internet this week was sending us mail, and you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your mail. We cherish getting your mail, and today's first mail is from Brendan. Here's what Brendan had to say. Brendan said, thanks, guys, for reading my email on the podcast a few episodes back. Thank you, John, for playing a Lay Butcherette's track. It was sweet. An Aussie band is coming to towns near you in America and Canada. Check them out if you get the chance. They may not be punk, but they are very Melbourne and worth a look. They are called the Smith Street Band, and the Hard Girls is opening.
Mm. What about Radio Birdman? Are they still around? I like pretty cool. Radio Birdman.
Smith Street Band's a little wimpy for my taste.
Well, but I mean, if we're just naming Australian bands, AC/DC, Men at Work. I love all those. I
come
from
the land down under. In excess, dude.
Isn't Nick Cave Australian? I think so. Yeah.
Mel Gibson? That's all I can think of.
I feel like the Smith Street Band is fairly popular around here. Or at least
they are too, but
at least like on the among the punk news people seem to know about them.
Punk news people love them. Yeah. And of course Hard Girls, they're a long standing big favorite of punk news, that they're they're three-fourths of classics of love, which I will never stop lamenting. Here's another email. This is from No Name Signed. Adam, you might know the answer to this, and there might not be an answer to this. Hey, guys. I was wondering if there is a place where I can download the first episodes and onward of the Punk News Podcast. Adam? Do we even have them archived anywhere? I feel like we should, but I think it might be gone forever.
I am going to look on the computer which I am sitting on, and I will have an answer to this question because this is a good question. I don't know. So at some point in the past, I went and I truncated the feed because the RSS file that actually has all the episodes in it that iTunes picks up on, it got really, really long. And there was a certain point where I think like Apple advised that like if the feed is gigantic, it might actually prevent their show from getting out there. So I remember I truncated it a few years ago. But here I can answer this really easy. Watch podcast.
Well, while I'm doing that, I'm just going to read this email. This is from Nick, and I'm going to email Nick back directly. But Nick said, I heard a mention on the podcast that if one wanted to write for Punk News, the door was open. I'd absolutely love to contribute. I've been a big fan of the org, and I think I could add a unique voice to the site. I love punk, garage, rock, cars, and do a little bit of writing on my own. I'd love to contribute in any way to the site. Let me know if you've got room for another vegan, straight-edge gearhead from the Bay Area. Either way, I love the site, love the podcast, and would love to help contribute. Nick, I'll send you an email directly. But if anyone else wants to contribute, Punk News is now more wide open than ever. If you want to contribute to Punk News, email johng@punknews.org. That's johng@punknews.org. If you want to write into the podcast, you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your mail. Adam White, do you have an answer? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I have no idea where they are. They might be somewhere that I don't have easy access to at the moment. But I will find that out because that's a good question. That said, I don't exactly know why anyone would want to listen to old episodes of a news show, because everything that we talk about on those episodes is, I mean, outside of like goofy banter shit, is, you know, incredibly old and in the past. So
don't fight what the consumer wants, Adam. If the consumer wants old podcasts, I would say let's give it to him. Let's deliver it.
I'm a little bit fascinated every email that we have somehow disappeared these from the internet, because you're not supposed to be able to do that.
Every listener who writes an email represents probably tens of people who are interested in that. So
I can't imagine. I have absolutely gone back to the start of podcasts that I've really gotten into and have binge listened to them over the course of months. So I've done this, but.
But it's rarely 300, pushing 300 episodes, I bet.
Well, hey, no, I mean, I do it, and I've done it. But that said, I do that on shows that are good. I don't know if I would do that.
Listen, Adam, don't talk bad about the Punkies. This is a good program. People not only tune in to hear about the news, they not only tune in to hear about our critiques on the news, but they tune in to hear our banter, our general chemistry between one another, our ability to agree and to fight. The Punk News Podcast is a fairly unique podcast in that sometimes we agree and sometimes we fight, but we all get along, which is actually fairly unusual for a podcast. There is something special between us three and some of the other contributors of the Punk News Podcast. So, Adam White, how dare you defame the Punk News Podcast? How dare you?
Well, that said, these were all the shows that you weren't on.
Well, they're shit. Forget about them.
Yeah.
No, but it is funny if you go listen to the old, not the drug example, but if you do listen to the old one, it's like NoFX is putting out a record. Adam, what do you think? That's interesting. Rich, what do you think? That is interesting. I agree. Let's talk about the Lawrence Arms going on tour. Adam, what do you think? So,
I know, and now we just now it's just it's like that now, but just like the Melvins, right? So, John, you have a complaint about the internet.
I'm mad at the internet. Here's why. So, man, I don't know. And Adam White and Tom Trom, you guys can feedback on this. But man, I'm on Facebook fairly often. I'm on at least once a day. Sometimes more. Well, usually more. I mean, I'm actually actively looking at Facebook. I'd say once a day, but I check it fairly frequently. But man, anymore it just seems that everyone is so self-righteous, and everyone all has it all figured out, and everyone knows that this guy's a complete asshole and this person's a saint, and there doesn't seem to be any middle grounds, and people just go on to fight, but no one seems to change their minds, and everyone is drawing all these lines, and if you don't do this, you're a jerk. If you do this, you're a jerk. And people seem to want to pile on, like if there's a question at hand, and some people come off on one way on that, everyone will pile on and just bang on that and beat somebody into the ground for even a minor infraction. I'm not even referring to anything specifically. It just seems to me that MySpace is becoming more and more narcissistic-like, and that it just seems to be more and more an unhealthy place. And anymore I go on, I just get angry because all these people are just, you know, like saying this person. There seems to be very little understanding on Facebook and more shouting than ever. Do you guys feel – maybe it's because it's getting closer to election season. Do you guys feel that way, or am I just becoming more sensitive to Facebook? I'm probably not going to ever – well, I shouldn't say ever, but – I've been thinking about quitting Facebook. I'm not going to do it because I do love it too much, and I like to stay up to date on bad news and stuff. But I might just start blocking everybody I know, because it's I'm not really getting much joy from people, not even from people being so absolutely sure they're 100% right about this issue, and I'm an experienced person and I know that this is the truth. I get so tired by that. There seems to be very little nuance or examination of ideas.
So, I don't know if I can defend
Facebook.
You know, people, Facebook, and the people on the internet.
Do you feel that it's worse than it was, say, a year ago?
I don't know. Like I've always been very standoffish with Facebook, and I'm the same way as you, where there's a part of me that feels that quitting it would be a huge burden taken away from me, right? But on the other hand. We use Facebook groups for organizing the punk news stuff. So there's like practical reasons why I kind of have to keep it around. But like even outside of that, even if we found some other place to convene in the talk punk news stuff, there's I'm so hot and cold on it, because I like Twitter. Personally, it's where I like to hang out. If I have a stupid thought about music or whatever, that's where I would prefer to go put it. But I've started to force myself over the past year, when I have one of those things, go through it on Facebook too. And I mean, I hate to say, but I always get way more reaction there. So there's a, you know, there's a go where the people are thing that's playing into it. I feel like I've only really been seriously looking at it for the past year, after a long time ignoring it. And I just see the same internet shit that you always see. People screaming their stupid political opinions at each other. People, you know, taking horrible moral positions on things. you know, you read just streams of idiocy and have to grapple with whether you need to tell, you know, intractable dummies that they're being intractable dummies and whether that's a good use of your time. You know, I see it. I don't know what to do about it. I don't know if just detaching from the universe is necessarily going to better anything for anyone. It's depressing, John. I don't know what to tell you.
I think the election certainly has something to do with it, John. But, you know, here's what I found. I love it to see what bands are up to and see what tours are coming, all that stuff. I need to like more bands and things and follow more bands and things and like less, you know, girls I went to high school with. Makes my life better. But yeah, as far as the political thing is pretty brutal, but I always try to stick with the old adage, you know, it's a waste of breath to argue with a fool. So I just shake my head and keep scrolling.
Well, and actually, to wrap this up, though, I wouldn't waste my time arguing with people about politics on the internet because no one wins in that situation. But I wonder, are people less analytical and critical and more, I don't know, self-righteous these days? Or are people always that way and Facebook just allows you to act as a true narcissist without having to worry about anything else? Like, you can be your true self on Facebook without worrying about the implications. Maybe Facebook really is a window into the human psyche, whereas nothing else has truly been that could bore that deep before.
I feel that people have been emboldened to voice their they haven't been emboldened to like engage in political debate and discussion. They've been emboldened to be snarky because they assume that if they can go on and be snarky, that there's going to be some subset of people that are going to like whatever their snarkiness is, and then because of that's their justification to do it, and they don't realize, I guess, like who they're turning off or anything like that. Like, I compare it to, like, I don't know, like if I'm at work and I go and I'm sitting down with a client of mine or something like that, and we're having lunch. Like, I'm not getting his opinion on what our prime minister is doing or whether he likes the guy or not. I'm not talking about like the leadership race for this or that party. Sorry, I'm giving Canadian examples for this, but like those things don't come up because there's like a, you know, that kind of like unwritten, like civilized conversation thing here. Like, you know, you could be a complete, you know, conservative. I could be a, you know, pinko communist, but we're going to sit across the table from each other and eat a sandwich and talk about whatever we're here to talk about, like gentlemen, and not have to, like, you know, not get into the shit. But there's a validation, I think, that you can get when you can go onto Facebook and you can put, you know, your little comment about, you know, again, Canadian example here, but you're going to get someone that's going to go on and say, like, oh, the dollar's doing really poorly. Thanks, Justin Trudeau. Great job, blah, blah, blah. And then have a bunch of people like that. And then because people like it, you're like, haha, I've said a funny thing that people like. Meanwhile, there's a lot of us that are reading something like that and going, like, you dipshit, that's not how the economy works. Right? And then we have to fight off our urge to actually waste our time by having to, I don't know, explain that to someone that doesn't actually want the debate. So, you know, it absolutely emboldens people to open their big mouths when, you know, in a way that's completely non-constructive, because they don't want to have a discussion about how, like, you know, how currency works, or how, you know, what market forces are, you know, pressuring, you know, investment in our economy or this or that, or whatever the actual debates people would have about these things. They just want to say like a snarky thing and have people click like, because then it validates their snarkiness.
Adam, so you're absolutely 90% of posts on Facebook aren't truly about the topic of which they claim to be. They are really about, tell me I'm great.
Yeah, like so much, I mean, and there's a flip side to this, which is, and this is me putting on my scumbag marketer hat. I have lots of hats, my Canada hat and my scumbag marketer hat are the two I'm wearing right now.
I imagine your Canada hat is like a big Mounties hat, just FYI.
It's just a toque, really. But
it's got those ear flaps.
That's not a toque. The people that do like internet marketing well, that do like social media marketing well and stuff like that, as they grasp onto that thing where they say people want validation, People want to be loved, right? So if you're, say, if you're a band and you're on Twitter and all you're doing is like putting out your tour dates, then, you know, no one gives a shit. That's cold. But when someone says, you know, oh man, you know, I love the Shit Fucks, they're my favorite band, and then you're the Shit Fucks on Twitter and you go on there and you're like, hey, thanks, man, you know, come out to our next show, I want to give you a t-shirt or something like that, right? All of a sudden that person is like, holy shit, the band talked to me, this is great, right? Like, I get that validation, I get that little pang of like, ooh, you know, they listened to me. So, you know, if you can give that to people, that's what they want. That's what everyone's doing on this. That's everyone's doing on this. It's just like, everyone's just love me, love me, love me. You know, and like, we all do it because it's a completely human thing. It's like, you want that, you know, you want people to recognize the, you know, that you exist and that you aren't just like, you know, withering away in an empty field dying. So anything that you can, go out there and give people that, you know, validates their experience is what keeps them going. And unfortunately, that fuels people to go on to these things and to say stupid political shit because they know all the other dipshits that agree with their stupid political shit are going to go click like on it. So,
but what, yeah. How apropos Adam White saying that Facebook is essentially man's crying out to be validated and to say you are so worth
depressing.
Something. And to further that, that is once again a statement of man's own futility in proving that he has free will and that there is not predestination as seen through Facebook. Speaking of free will, Tom Trom, hit us with some of your free will. What tune do you have to play tonight?
I'm going to play another band from Grand Rapids. They put out their EP about a year ago. The band is called Bong Mountain, and they self-released an EP. It's called You're Doing Great. And this song is called Why You So Short.
Dear Divino, why are you so nice to me? I would have understood if you just hung out with your friends and you never said hi to me. I really would have been fine. Dear Divina, you know you're taller than I am, but you still took me in a circle by the hand for the girls as the boys skate. And you talked about snakes. You said you thought I was cool. Hey, Divina!
And that was Why You So Short by Bong Mountain out there in Grand Rapids, home of Step by Step. I believe they're Frank Canner's favorite band. Let's hit some news, even though it's already getting pretty late. Listen, we should have talked about this a little while ago, but we did not. The site-wide best of 2015 Punk News top pick records of 2015 has been released. And, of course, the top record was, drum roll, please.
Like a real one?
Nightbirds, as we called it, as we knew it. And mind you, when we called it, we didn't even know. Nightbirds won Punk News' Best of 2015 as an amalgamation of the votes, essentially, of all the Punk News staff. I don't know about you guys, but I'm glad Nightbirds won. Nightbirds was not my top pick of the year. I think it was my number three. But I think more than any other record, Nightbirds deserved to win the Best Punk Record of 2015 at Punk News because they're classic punk. Because they are punk, but because the record is fresh and exciting, daring, but not too meatheaded. It's fairly intellectual. I think more than any other record release, the Nightbirds deserved the site-wide Best of Punk News 2015.
Yeah, it was really good to see that they actually took that away, because I think it's very fitting. Not only is it a great record, but it's fitting because it very well speaks to the kind of stuff that I think Punk News as a disembodied floating head likes, right? And there's lots of other stuff that we liked, but you know, whether it's, you know, quote unquote, you know, straight punk rock is more questionable. So I would have been a little bit more bummed if, even though I love these records, you know, if the stuff from like, say, Sleater-Kinney or even like Jeff Rosenstock or you know, if any of those had taken the top spot, it would have been like, you know, those are good records. That's cool. But, you know, it's nice, but it feels better when that spot actually goes to, you know, a band where we don't have to make any, you know, we have no hyphens, we have no qualifiers. It's a punk rock record. It's nice to see when it's just that. And it's not like, oh, well, this is just like a really good record in general that everyone liked, and whether it's punk rock or not doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. No. Like, this is a fucking punk rock record, and it's the one that everyone liked more than anything, and that's great.
Not wimpy.
Yes, also that.
A lot of the records on our top 20, in my humble opinion.
I was surprised that War on Women plays so highly. Not that I don't think it's a great record. War on Women, I think, is a fantastic record. But I actually didn't think War on Women had quite the mass appeal that apparently it did. Number three, that's pretty good, man. War on Women, way up the top. I was very happy.
It was on quite a few lists, I think.
I feel that War on Women was a bit of a it broke out of some genre boundaries, because for whatever reason, like, I heard it and I. You know, I don't generally follow Bridge Nine stuff, so you know, I'm not going out there and checking out everything that label's putting out. So if there's, say, a Bridge, I have nothing against them. It's just that like that the kind of hardcore they do isn't usually my cup of tea. So if there's a Bridge Nine band that, you know, all of a sudden I'm super aware of and into it, that means something. It means that you know, for whatever reason, they've managed to get past their label and kind of exposed to the wider group. So I think that like a lot of people that wouldn't normally have, you know, checked out, you know, something from that exact subgenre or that exact label, for whatever reason, heard the Roar and Women records. So that definitely helped it out. It may have just been that it was that good that everyone checked it out.
It was a good year for women in punk rock in general, I think. I feel like there's been a little bit of an upswing.
Hey, and, top three records on my list were all female.
But here's the thing, Adam, and you know, just based on the numbers and the way this worked, it was so fragmented. There was no really two lists the same. So an album like you know, if two, you know, people gave it a really high score, you know, it could really catapult the album in, because so many of them are only on one list or two lists. So.
Yeah, the one that I was worried about as I was doing the math, because I was the one that tallied it up, was there was a, where is it here? It ended up being tied for fifth, which was the Kendrick Lamar.
Oh yeah,
Butterfly, right? So yeah. I don't actually know anything about that record in particular, but like no. it's a hip hop record, which is fine, yep. But it would be super weird when people are looking to us to find out, like, what's the best punk rock of the year, if the math happened to have made that, say, the number one, it just would have been odd to have to like have that conversation and be like, and just to justify it and be like, yeah, there was lots of good punk rock, but you know, math. So the math said it was Kendrick Lamar is the number one. So I guess that's number one. Sorry. Right. We're like, I don't know. I feel that that's a disservice, like probably both to that record and to, you know, what people actually tune in for. So it's nice when it's someone like Nightbirds and it all kind of works out that way.
And I think it is. The Nightbirds are pretty aggressive compared to the rest of the list. I mean, there's other heavier stuff on there too, but the Nightbirds are snotty and they're fast and good stuff. I know we spend a lot of time singing their praises, but it's good stuff.
For me, like the snotty is a big thing. Like there's like with any of these bands, and this is, sorry, I'm making noise by playing with shit on my desk next to my mic here. But by the but like with so many of the bands that Punk News gets into, what really starts to make me lose interest in stuff is, to me, a big part of punk rock is that kind of that sneeringness, right?
Got that attitude.
Yeah, right. There's that kind of like fuck you attitude that's worked mm-hmm. into it. And
not so much whining.
No, well, no, and that's the problem, is that you go too far in direction A or direction B and things go right off the rails. So if you get too snotty to the point where you're being bratty, that all of a sudden you're in this like you're in this, you know, Blink 182 kids music territory, right? And then if you go too far in the other way where you're just going to play things super serious, then you can still make some great rock and roll records, but they feel less punk rock to me. So I'm looking over at like the Menzingers here, right? Where, you know, when if they're going to, you know, dial back, say, some of the punk rockiness of it, they can be a totally great rock and roll band, but, you know, it doesn't feel as punk to me, you know?
I think so, they already have dialed back some of their punk rockiness.
Yeah, but I mean, I generally like that band, both as people and a band, so I don't want to slag them, but they're a good example in this case, right? So like for me, like the sweet spot is that there's got to be a little bit of, you know, a little bit of someone gritting his teeth and giving you the finger, right?
Yeah, and a little bit of melody. You know, there's room for everything, right?
So there is that balance that actually makes good punk rock to me, and like exactly. So, and Nightbirds has that, so that's what's cool.
Mm-hmm. They have Nightbirds, three thumbs up from Punk News is a great record. Completely unrelated, Teenage Bottle Rocket, as you, of course, you know, Brandon Carlisle of Teenage Bottle Rocket passed away quite suddenly last year, and honestly, it's no one knew what the band was going to do. I know I thought they were going to break up. I thought that was going to be the end of Teenage Bottle Rocket. However, Teenage Bottle Rocket has decided to continue. The band will continue with drummer Darren Chuka, who is currently in Old Wives. Tom Trauma, it's always tough. Well, not that I wouldn't know personally. I don't think you would know personally either. It's always tough when a band loses a member. Is this the right thing to do? Is there a right thing to do? Or is every situation unique?
Well, I think every situation is unique, but at Teenage Bottle Rocket, the only two guys, Brandon and what's the brother who sings? What's the brother who sings and plays guitar? I can't think of his name.
Is it Cody? Not Cody.
No, Cody's the other singer, guitar player from Lillington's. But I think those
Ray?
Two.
Ray, isn't it Ray?
Ray Carlisle, that's right, because Miguel Chen and Cody, neither of them were in the original. So I think they were the only two that were the original Teenage Bottle Rocket lineup. So, you know, if they wanted to quit at this point, I don't think anybody would have blamed them. But I think it's cool that they're going on. It's what they do, you know?
I think that's just it, is that, like, this is one of these, I think, rare, you know, like, modern-day punk rock bands that, you know, is at least popular enough that they could make like a go of it, of this being something of a career for them. Yeah. Like, you know, like a lot of bands can, you know, release a record, you know, take a couple months vacation from work, go play a tour or something like that. But essentially, you know, like being in the band isn't their lives. But like Teenage Bottle Rocket, maybe I'm overestimating, but it feels like they're sort of at the stage where, you know, if they keep touring, if they keep making records, that, like, you know, like this is their chance, right?
They put out a record every 2 years and they tour, and but those guys are pushing 40. I mean, they're not.
I know they are actually
I think Cody might be older than that, but
well, and actually it's funny because I don't know why I use that example, because I know that some of the guys in Teenage Bottle Rocket in particular are employed, but like with real jobs in the real world. But I mean, this is the biggest band that any of these guys have ever been in. A lot of these guys have been playing music their entire lives. What happened was totally tragic, losing Brandon, but what do you do if not just pick up and keep going, and not even pick up and move on, but just keep moving, right? Like, I figure you have to. It's definitely gonna change their art. It's definitely gonna probably come, you know, be something that affects what they're doing, you know, as far as, you know, tone and lyrics and everything else for the next forever. But to just kind of hang up everything and walk away from it, or to, you know, I can't see you doing that.
I just saw them a couple months before this happened, and they still got it. I'm glad they're carrying on, definitely.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, what's the alternative? I guess the alternative is that, like you say, like, okay, well, we retired the name and we start a different band for the sake of respect or whatever else, right? Because it's not gonna be the same band without him.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I could see people maybe making the argument to do that, but at the same point, I don't know if the best way to respect to honor the dead is to throw out everything that you created with them and start new. Like that.
Yeah.
That seems.
And it's certainly not the best. It's certainly not the best way to try to make a living, to start over with a new band name.
No, I can't imagine that, like, you know, that would have been what Brandon would have wanted. Like, can you guys all take a huge pay cut and
exactly.
and you know, start
back underground in Casper, Wyoming, or wherever they're from.
So, you know, I can't fault them on this. I mean, so some people were questioning the timing of it, I guess, a little bit, but. When is there a good time? Like, death is a horrible thing that happens. There's no appropriate or inappropriate, you know, period in which you have to, you know, hang up your life. Like, people grieve in their own way. So,
well, and actually, you know, people were saying it's too soon. I actually might disagree with that, in that, like, you could make the argument that it's virtuous for the band to keep going so suddenly, because right then emotions are still hot. They might be, you know, they might be saying to themselves, listen, if we sit down and think about this, it might fall apart. So let's just keep going and let's keep the momentum while we have it, in honor of our fallen bandmate and, you know, in their own interest too. And so there is something admirable about that, that instead of sitting down and thinking about it and thinking about the long-term implications, they're just saying, let's keep the momentum going. You know, so I don't think it's fair to say it's too soon. You should wait a respectful amount of time, well, you know. I mean, it wasn't like it was the next day, you know what I mean?
Here's a great example of internet douchebags. Because Ray Carlisle, the guy's twin brother, is ready to move on. He can frickin' move on if he wants to.
True,
you know what
true,
I mean?
True.
He, you know, nobody is better decision to decide when it's time than him. So shut up, trolls.
Well put. Tom trying to tell the trolls to shut up. Adam White, should we play a song, or what do you think?
You want to play a song?
No, you know, let's briefly talk about all our favorite bands that everyone else hates. Let's do that. I don't want to skip these guys. I love this band. However, I have a defense of them. The Sex Pistols are putting out Chuck Taylor's Shoes. Now you, yes you, can make your feet spiffier than ever with Sex Pistols branded Chuck Taylor Shoes. They range from $65 to $80, and you can also get a Sex Pistol t-shirt or a Sex Pistol bomber jacket. A lot of people were saying, I've got a definite opinion on this. I'll go last, though. Adam White, what's your opinion? Tom, you're a Sex Pistol fan too, right?
I am.
Yeah, so we're all Sex Pistols fans.
Not only am I a Sex Pistols fan, but I'm also a canvas shoe hoarder. I have, like, a shitload of Vans and Converse that I've bought over the years, and I will not be buying these. It's whatever. I don't know that the – I don't know if the Pistols have control of their own name, so I'm not even going to, like, blame it on just blatant, you know, commercialism, but yeah, I don't need those.
That's
so.
Oh, go ahead, Adam.
No. I mean, yeah. I mean, I would. I'm a huge Sex Pistols fan, and I, you know, I wear Chucks all over the place, and yeah, I don't necessarily. I wouldn't really want to wear these either, just because they're not. You know, they seem goofy. But the
look at my Sex Pistols shoes, guys. You see my new Sex Pistols shoes.
But let's clear this one thing up here. Now I'm, because this is the question that I always have whenever this comes up. And as much as I like to, defend John Lydon there, we should figure out who actually owns the name Sex Pistols. Who's actually, you know, licensing this stuff, right?
But also, Adam, we have to figure out who licensed the album art too, because ends. Like the shirt is that same Sex Pistols photo you see all the time, and the album cover. So even though John Lydon might own the name Sex Pistols, he might not own the album art in that particular picture.
Yeah, true, I guess. So the – let's see here.
This is one ugly shirt, I'll tell you that.
So the – I'm just picking this up off – this is off a fucking like Yahoo Answers thing, referencing a Wikipedia article. And to tell you the truth, I can't actually find this exact quote in the current Wikipedia article. So take this with a huge grain of salt. But according to the internet, which is never wrong, okay, in 1987, John Lydon took Malcolm McLaren to court in order to gain control of the Sex Pistols copyright and to sue him for, quote, all the criminal activities that took place, quote. After a long, drawn-out court case, Lydon won and set up a company called Sex Pistols Residuals, which is a company for Rotten Jones, Cook, and Matlock and the estate of Sid Vicious. And that Sex Pistols Residuals company gained complete ownership of the band's master recordings, all the copyrights to the music publishing of the songs, and ownership of all film footage and the name Sex Pistols. Now, that is a Yahoo Answers quote of a Wikipedia article, and if I look at said Wikipedia article, I cannot find that quote. So, I have no idea how true that actually is. So, you know, take that for what you will. But let's go on the assumption here that that actually happened, and. They do own their stuff. I mean, if you look at the actual, you know, SexPistolsOfficial.com website, it is copyright to Sex Pistols Residuals or something like that. Copyright 2002 Sex Pistols Residuals, right? On the other hand, there's a Universal Music logo at the bottom of the page too. So I don't know, but the if we assume that that company exists and that the people who are in the Sex Pistols actually control their name, then they totally did. Go and give themselves, you know, they did sign off on, hey, let's make some Converse, or, you know, worse to me was, hey, let's put it on a credit card. But, you know, they did, so we can't claim, you know, oh, it's the big bad music company licensed out their shit to be on a shoe. So
I will voice my disgust by not buying any of it.
Yeah, so. But no, that I just don't understand how people, I don't know, I guess how people get upset about this. Like I looked at one of the Facebook posts. Oh no, I looked at like Converse actually posted on Facebook. Okay, we can come back to what we were talking about originally. Converse announced this with a Facebook post, and there's like a million comments from people there who are just raging at each other about like whether the Sex Pistols are punk or not. And
really?
And just, yeah, but just like having to have been a part of that silly argument for like over a decade on Punk News, to have to all of a sudden see it fresh and talking about the fucking Sex Pistols, like starting at zero, basically.
Well, how can you argue they're not a punk, whatever?
It's just, it's more of this like moralizing that we've lumped in with like where punk rock is no longer, it's certainly no longer a genre of music, and it's also no longer a youth movement, and it's just, but what it is it's a set of moral value. It's a set of morals and a set of rules that we somehow all agreed to, although I never agreed to them. And
the guys, you never agreed to them, but they shift as you get older.
And the guys that created the genre didn't agree to either, mind you.
Well, yeah, the Ramones, I mean, the Godfathers, the genre, the Ramones, they wanted to be a pop band. They wanted to be huge, you know? It was accidental at best.
Well, so, I mean, I don't know. Like, there's a part of me that really feels that, like, at some point, the whole music universe collectively took the value judgments of Ian MacKay.
I say crass.
Do you say McKay or MacKay?
Ian MacKay.
It's MacKay.
It's MacKay.
Yeah. There's a few people, the Ian MacKays. Yeah,
but like they collectively went and said, what would Ian do or what did Ian do?
Tim Yo for Maximum Rock and Roll was big.
Right. And whatever the answer to that was became the barometer for whether something could be legitimately punk or not. So, like, you know, are these Sex Pistols shoes tacky? Yeah. Are they necessary? No. Do they seem like a cash grab? I guess. Do I give too much of a shit about it? I don't. And does it change my, you know, my like of Sex Pistols stuff? Like, not one iota. So, I don't know. Like, I can deal with that. Like, I feel that I can hold on one hand my appreciation of music, and on the other hand, stupid decisions that human beings make, and I can justify those two things. So, you know, I can like Never Mind the Bollocks, but I can also think that, you know, releasing a Sex Pistols credit card is a fucking stupid thing, and I can somehow hold those two things and go like, yeah, I understand, like, one is good, one is bad, you know, and I continue to live my life. So
exactly. Doesn't hurt us one bit.
But, you know, people on Facebook and whatever feel that they need to shout at each other about this, and it makes me want to go crawl into a hole. So anyways, John, do you have anything to add to that?
I agree. That's a good point.
Yay.
Adam White, do you have a song?
I do. So
I'm mocking the old punkies podcast.
Yeah, you are. I was part of that. Fuck you. So what we're gonna do is I'm gonna use my platform of just like throwing random bands from Toronto at people. So this is a band called Casper Skulls. This is from a 7-inch they released last August called King of Gold. This is kind of a cool post-punk thing that's happening here. Some spoken rather than sang lyrics. If you're a fan of like a band like Protomartyr, this will probably be right up your alley. So, you know, it's pretty brooding. It's pretty neat. So this is the song King of Gold from Casper Skulls from Toronto.
Hard no salvation, the stingers was a kill. girl against the king and you're the one on trial. Last word of romance, first sound of denial. Could be a great career as long as it lasts. Some sort of vanity reflected in the glass. Ordinary whisper, stated so bold. Some sort of adversity stirred up in his soul. Maybe I'm the king of gold. King of gold. King of gold. Maybe I'm the king of gold. King of gold. King of gold. Maybe I'm the king of gold. King of gold. King of gold. Maybe I'm the king of gold. King of gold. King of gold.
And we are back. That was Casper Skulls doing King of Gold. So let's talk about a band that a lot of people in the punk news are excited about, Ship Thieves, which is Chris Wallard and the Ship Thieves. That's Chris Wallard of Hot Water Music, a more orgcore band you could not find. They've released a new song. It's called Born Into This. It's off No Idea Records on January 29, and the album's called No Anchor. So you guys check this out. Are you guys Hot Water Music fans? Are you guys excited for this?
I am definitely a Hot Water Music fan, and I liked the first Ship Thieves record, which was just it was like Chris Wallard and the Ship Thieves at that point. I guess it was, you know, his name was part of it, more of a solo project, I guess. I liked that first record, but it has not super stuck with me in the ensuing years, and I feel like they have released. There was a second full length even. Like, I feel like they've released stuff that I somehow missed in the time in between then and there. So, you know, I am by no means the expert. I'm probably woefully behind on these guys. You know, this was nice. It's fairly safe. It's fairly, you know, if you've listened to other kind of like of Wallard's solo stuff or his other stuff with the Ship Thieves, it's up that kind of same, you know, mid-tempo rock and roll alley. You know, take that for what you will. But you know, if you are into the kind of the orgcore thing, the Menzinger's Restorations, you know, realm of things, then yeah, you'll like this. I think
I like Hot Water Music. This was just okay. I mean, I didn't dislike it. It was all right.
Yeah, that's partly been my whole problem with a lot of the post Hot Water Music stuff is that like I like a lot of it, but I like a lot of it. In you know, in that it's fine. Yeah. You know, like come end of year, I'm not going crazy about it. I'm not thinking about it outside of when it's playing initially. And you know, that's partly just due to, I think, the volume of it. Like, there's been a lot of post Hot Water Music solo stuff, and you know, it's all been, you know, serviceable, I guess. Is that a bad thing?
I know that sounds like we're really putting it down. I don't really mean to sound like I'm putting it down. It's just
it's cool. It's not gonna melt your
face. I don't know that I'm gonna carve out a lot of time for it just because I got a lot of things I want to listen to.
Yeah, and I guess that's I that sounds like such damning praise, but
you know. I know, I don't mean to sound like such a dick about it, but
no, I mean,
it's just how it is.
It's completely fine. Would this have shown up on your radar if it wasn't a Chris Wallard band is the question, and I would say in that case it would probably not. Like, it probably would have fallen into the mix of like tons of other kind of like mid-tempo indie rock bands, and you never would have crept above that. But Chris Wallard's name elevates it. But you know, if you're into this, you're into these guys, you're into this band, you know, it's fine. John, you're always trying to be really democratic about this stuff because I know this isn't your bag.
I'm just going to read this quote off the website. You should go online and check out this article. And this is one of the commenters. Is it just me? Is it just me? Or does Wallard's head look like it is just starting to shrink in this picture? I think it's because the photographer is slightly below neck level and he's pointing up and Chris is leaning back. So I'm not making fun of Chris. I'm making fun of this picture. It does look like that scene in Beetlejuice where his head shrinks. It does look like Wallard's head is shrinking in this picture. It really does.
So. Who, me? Who, me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Inside joke.
So,
inside joke for John.
Speaking of stuff here,
Oh, you, me? Now I get to talk.
Who, me? I'm about 525 pounds.
That's about right.
So I have a feeling we're about the exact same discussion that we just had. We're going to talk about Weezer.
Oh, I don't know. My level of indifference seems to be rising.
Weezer has announced that they are going to release a new album, and they are going on tour. The album, like so many of their other albums, is going to be self-titled, but it will have a white cover. Not that there has ever been a white album before without a title. The album will be out on April 1st. The band has released a new video for their first single from this new record called King of the World. And they've also announced a bunch of tour dates. They are hitting the road on March 30th, which is my birthday, in Brooklyn, New York. And they are going to be touring pretty extensively through the summer. And they have dates all the way up through August from kind of coast to coast in the U.S. and some dates in Canada, too. So you can find all that stuff on Punk News. So, King of the World's new Weezer song. I've got an opinion on this, but real
briefly, I will just say that I did not listen to the song, and I don't really have anything against Weezer. And under the right circumstances, I might even go see them. But they're touring the country, playing huge places like 20,000 seat outdoor amphitheaters, and they're co-headlining with Panic at the Disco, which will guarantee my not being involved with this tour in any way, shape, or form. So anyway, I don't hate Weezer, but I haven't listened to them consistently for 20 years.
What is interesting is the first show is at Warsaw in Brooklyn, which is kind of a gimmick, if you will, because the Warsaw is not a tiny, tiny club, but it's small. Like World Inferno plays Warsaw when they're up in Brooklyn. So, I mean, it's not that big of a place. As for the new Weezer song, you know, it's Weezer-ish. It seems to be Weezer getting away from their gimmick for a while. Like, I'm not even a huge Weezer fan, but the Weezer thing used to be fundamentally good songs flavored with some gimmickiness and some wackiness. Somewhere along the line, Weezer just became pure gimmicks and pure wackiness and pure trolling, if you will, and they forgot they stopped doing substance. Was it because the magic was gone? Was it because they were just lazy? Who's to say? Like, I think Hurley exemplifies that more than almost anything else. Of course, the cover of the White Album is kind of gimmicky, too, to tell you the truth. But I guess that's a little bit more clever because, you know, Weezer has the colored album covers. And, you know, it's funny in that – in its audaciousness in saying that we too can have a white album. Like, we're claiming one of the most famous albums ever as our own, the album cover, which is amusing. This song to me – I'm not a huge Weezer fan. This song sounded Weezer-ish to me. It sounded like Weezer. I will say it did sound like Weezer – trying to have substance in their music again instead of pure gimmicksy or pure hijinks. But I think it's maybe too little too late. I think Weezer is just going to, you know, keep their fan base, but they're not going to light the world on fire again. But then again, they've been around for, what, 25 years now? So, I mean, hey, you know.
I think this is a good thing, is that this song kind of sounds like Weezer to me, and that's good. We talked about the Offspring on last week's show, and the one thing that I mentioned was that, after Ixnay, that, like, to me, every Offspring single felt like it was trying to be like a gimmick song, where everything was just you know, goofy and silly, and that, you know, that they made a lot of money with, I guess, Americana, and then from that they were like, hey, every song can be a novelty song. And Weezer, as absolutely to my ear, been doing that for the past decade. And it makes me sad because, like, I was one of these people that was in, you know, like the Blue Album in 1994 was one of the first, you know, CDs I went out under my own power and bought. I listened to that. I listened to Pinkerton. When they came back and did the Green thing, I was like, whoa, holy shit, Weezer is back. And then, you know, I got the Green Album and I was like, it's all right. And then after that, what was the one after that? Maladroit, same thing. It was maybe less all right, but, you know, it at least wasn't goofy. It just wasn't great. And you could attribute that to you know, to that initial spark was gone, that they weren't young guys anymore, that Matt Sharp wasn't part of the songwriting team, or whatever you wanted to attribute it to. But like after that point, I cut out, because everything that I heard after that started being really like Offspring levels of novelty goof song. And yeah, this doesn't feel like that. There's a few kind of like little vocal inflections in the chorus of the song that actually feel kind of like old school Weezer-y to me. Like they have that kind of like, they have that sort of like weird awkwardness that made, you know, Weezer sound more like Weezer and not like a hair metal band. So that, you know, that was in there and that was kind of cool. But, you know, having sat on the sidelines for the past 10 years on these guys, as they've been, you know, apparently just goof-assing around, I don't know if I have enough interest to get back on board. So
in Weezer's defense, they never did a song as bad as, you know, Pretty Fly for a White Guy. I mean, Beverly Hills wasn't that bad.
That, yes, to me, that those are both in the same category.
I don't think so.
Of like shitty songs from bands that should know better, but they know the song is a paycheck. Like, they know they can go make like a really, I mean, this was an easier argument, I guess, back in the days of MTV and stuff like that. But they, you know, you could make like a really stupid gimmicky video to go with this. It'll get lots of play. I mean, maybe that still applies with YouTube and everything. I don't know. But, you know, I look at songs like that and I think to myself that like the band isn't fucking into this, but the band knows this is a paycheck. And I feel like every Weezer song I've heard over the past 10 years have been like paycheck song.
But, you know, at the heart of the best Weezer songs are just great pop songs. I don't think they needed to do that. Offspring.
That's the thing, is that like I guess that's the big difference here between the two of them. Where I listen to the Offspring stuff that they did, and to me, I find it kind of reprehensible. I'm like this band sucks, and this band was good, and they could only really pull it off when they were just like being like a fast little angry punk rock band. And as soon as they tried to be anything more than that, it sucks. Weezer could totally be like a wonderful little, you know, genre crossing pop rock band.
Yeah.
And at some point they decided that rather than do that, they were going to make goofy novelty songs too, which they didn't need to do. Right. Like that's just a different level of infuriating. It's not that they have no talent. It's just that they've made the conscious decision that they would rather be dumb than not. So, I don't know. I'm going to see how many millionaires I can piss off on tonight's show.
Warren Buffett, you're a dick.
Yeah.
Bill Gates, go to hell.
You know what? I'm speaking out of like jilted lover tones on the Weezer thing, because like I was totally into them as a kid, and
they're playing in Detroit at a place called DTE Music Theater, and it's literally like 20,000 seat outdoor amphitheater. And it's them and Panic at the Disco, and I can't remember some of the other. I'm just like, it sounds like the least fun you could have on a Saturday night.
I mean, honestly, Tom, I can think of things that are less fun on Saturday night, to tell you the truth.
I don't know. Stay home and drink beer on my couch watching a nice documentary. But anyway.
Well,
segue from that.
Yeah. John.
Well, we got to wrap up the podcast with yet another death. And like I said before, I think they're going to keep coming. A lot of artists are getting older and older. So I don't know if we're going to, in the future, talk about every notable death, I guess, on the podcast. We'll have to discuss that later. But as of right now, we'll talk about Blowfly. Blowfly has passed away. You might not know who Blowfly is. Blowfly is actually a very, very important guy in music. He started doing music in the late 50s and early 60s as a guy called Clarence Reed. He was both a performer, a recorder, but more importantly, at the time, a producer. He produced a lot of huge, huge, huge blues, funk, soul hits. One of the most famous ones is Betty Wright's Clean Up Woman, which is a fantastic, fantastic song. He also wrote some songs for Casey and the Sunshine Band and a whole bunch of other, you know, I guess 70s funk groups. However, And actually, he recorded some albums himself as Clarence Reed. Some beautiful songs on there, too. Success as a performer eluded him, so eventually he created this character called Blowfly. Blowfly is basically an extremely, extremely, extremely filthy funk blues singer, and he would do originals and parodies of popular soul songs. Like, I'm sure you all know the famous song Rainy Night in Georgia. One of Blowfly's most famous songs is There's a Spermy Night in Georgia. And some of his songs aren't that clever at all, just pure filth. Some are extremely, extremely funny. He's always credited himself as inventing rap. I don't know if that's true. However, I think you can make a very, very strong case that he actually released the very first rap or hip-hop 12 song, recorded, that is. The most common cited source for the first hip-hop song is Rapper's Delight on 12-inch in 1978 with the Sugar Hill Gang. However, on Blowfly's 1976 album, there's a song called Blowfly's Rap. And to me, it sounds a lot like hip-hop. Now, of course, you can go back further. Pigmeat Markham, some reggae, some Jamaican music. You can find stuff that sounds like sort of like hip-hop. But to me, this sounds like the very first recorded rap on record. So I think you might have to give that one to Blowfly. After his career dwindled a little bit as a filthy blues man, he was around in the 80s, but not a whole lot of people knew him. Then in the early 2000s, believe it or not, Jello Biafra kind of pulled him back out of obscurity. Blowfly released two albums on Alternative Tentacles, the first, which is called Fahrenheit 69, the second, which is called Blowfly's Punk Rock Party. Fahrenheit 69 is a great, great album. It's Blowfly with his newest manager, Tom Broker, doing originals and songs with, you know, some punk legends. Jello Biafra recorded a song with him. Hunks from Hunks and His Punks, before he was famous, did a song with Blowfly. Afro Man did a song with Blowfly called Blowfly for President. It actually is a really, really funny song. And then after that, he also recorded an album with Tesco V of the Meat Men called Black in the Sack, which is really, really funny. And so all his songs are filthy. They're not PC, but Blowfly was a true original. There's a documentary out there. I think it's called The Wonderful World of Blowfly, or The Wheel World of Blowfly. It paints Blowfly. I didn't know him personally. I saw him live twice. First time, I didn't like it a whole lot because I didn't know a whole lot about him. Second time I saw Blowfly in Philadelphia, it was an amazing show. He came out with Tom Broker, and he's an old man. He's not ancient, but he's old. He's like 76. You know, it's the 76-year-old guy dancing with 25-year-old girls, 22-year-old girls, and he's singing the most filthy lyrics you've ever heard. But I think what was Blowfly's saving grace is no matter how filthy he was, no matter how offensive he was, you could tell he's not really trying to make anybody feel bad. He's just trying to do the ain't I a stinker routine, you know? So there was, despite Blowfly's filthy lyrics, I think there was a young boy's just humor in there. Just, you know, yucks for the sake of yucks, and let's just be silly if we can be silly. So I saw him in Philadelphia. He was great. But the Blowfly documentary, it paints Blowfly as a very complex character, and I think that's accurate in that, you know, huge success eluded him his entire life. He never really made a whole lot of money. However, he made some – oh, I should have mentioned this too, is one of the critical points of Blowfly's discography is he sold the rights to Clean Up Woman for like $8,000 or something, like a ridiculously low, like I think he did it for one mortgage payment, so that would have been like $1,000, right? He sold all his back catalog as a soul producer for like $1,000 for like one mortgage payment. Do you guys know who sampled Clean Up Woman?
I do not.
Beyonce. Do you have any idea what that sample is worth?
Probably a lot.
Hundreds of thousands. He gave away hundreds of thousands of dollars plus more other samples for about $1,000. But you could say, well, that's his own poor business decision, and you might be right. And, you know, he had a family. He had different levels of contact and getting along with his family. But he was a great artist and a funny guy. So I don't know, Tom and Adam, if you have anything to add to that. He's a complex guy, and it's sad that he's gone, but he certainly left a legacy behind him.
No, I got nothing to add. That was really good. Are we going to play something?
Should we play one of his famous soul productions? Should we play one of his own soul productions where he sang? Or should we play a Blowfly song where he's dirty?
Gotta go with Blowfly, dude.
All right, let's do. Even though the guy passed away, let's do. Let's do Blowfly's rap, which was also recorded later as Rap Dirty. It's the same song, though. I'll point out. I hate giving disclaimers, but I don't want people to say punk music are bad guys. This song was written in the 70s. At the time, some things which were offensive now were not considered offensive then, and some things which were offensive then are not offensive now. It's important to remember that this is 1976, so political correctness culture or whatever really had not even existed yet. So there's offensive stuff in here, but it's supposed to be offensive. But at the core, remember, Blowfly, I don't think, was ever really trying to make anybody feel bad. I think he was just trying to be outrageous and funny. And I think the song is outrageous and funny and quite clever. This is Blowfly's rap off 1976 Butterfly album.
Soul to your ass. Guys and girls, bulldaggers and faggots, is gonna rap in your ear till your ass get raggedy. The world should end, I'd be under no strain. I'd blast right off with my dangling. Wanna rap to all of you motherfuckers about my best friend, those no good truckers. Ride down the road, carrying a load, feeling more sexy than a pregnant toad. Checking out the scene on my CB, cause I don't want no vares fucking with me. That's a big 10-4, good buddy. Yeah. Smoking weed, feeling fine, when suddenly I see a blue light behind. Call a dickhead, check out my crack. Think I got a bear on my back. He's on my ass, and that's no joke, but I'm gonna leave that blue light motherfucker in the smoke. 10-4. City. Checking out the thighs of this fine hoe. I can tell she had a lot of ass below. But stopped up ahead for a bite to eat. I said, hey, bitch, give me some of this fine meat. She said, I got it here, so come on with it. But just make sure you got enough meat to get it. I said, my hands are large and my prick is bigger. Just open up your thighs while I pull my trigger. Yeah. I grabbed the bitch by the hand and hit it for the room. She had a fine body but a face like a coon. She sat on the bed and pulled off her clothes as the funk from my pussy started fucking with my nose. Suddenly I find that it all was a waste, cause there was a big prick staring me in the face. I kicked it with my feet and hit it with my hand. What I thought was a bitch was nothing but a man. And you know what I did then? I said, ooh. I said, ah. I said, ooh. Got the hell out of there. That's what I did. So I grabbed my shit and got back in the truck. And I thought to myself, what the fuck? After messing up my day and spoiling my plans, I said to myself, I can still use my hands. Thought about the fine bitch I had back home, and suddenly I couldn't help but to play with my bone. Yeah. While riding to the state of Alabama, in a little town where I love to ramble, I went in his bar, said, what the heck? Motherfucker, no good redneck. Some asshole at the end of the bar said, hey, nigga boy, do you know who you are? Well, I pulled out my dick and broke the bartender's glass, and I said, oh, you motherfuckers can't kick my ass. I remember what my daddy said one night. He said, niggas' pricks is bigger than white. But my black ass was in for a big surprise, because that cracker's dick was 3 times my size. And of course, you know, that isn't a big 10-4. I said, bitch, don't y'all fail me now. Let's get the hell out of here. He said, boy, I'm gonna kick your ass till your head turn blue. There ain't nothing I hate worse than a nigger or Jew. I said, are you sure you wanna fuck with me? I'm a distant cousin to Muhammad Ali. Suddenly his big prick began to shrink. He said, come on, boy, let's have a drink. Those rednecks in the corner started getting up out of their seats, carrying big clubs, wearing white sheets. He said, listen, nigger man, I'm the grand dragon of the Ku Klux Klan. He said, there's no nigger better than me. Motherfuck you and Muhammad Ali. I threw my drink in his face and I started to run as I felt the lead from his shotgun. I got in my rig and cut.
covered up my face, and I drove my truck through that motherfucking place. Hole started to run, it was glass in the hair, and the cracker's ass was flying everywhere. The Grand Dragon was on the ground with his ass bloody, and I looked at him, I said, 10-4, good buddy. Yeah! I reached in the seat and grabbed a bottle of wine, and I looked in the mirror and said, I can't stand myself sometimes. And then I said, ooh, I said, ah, I said, ooh.
And we are back. I think we all need to take showers after that filthy, 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 filthy song. Adam, are you feeling filthy?
It's gross, John.
Top drama, are you feeling filthy?
I'm a little aroused.
There you go. Listen, guys, thanks for being on the podcast. You can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all next.
Nobody else die next week. See ya.